a little about.
Well, what type, Mr. Golden?
Well, primarily the dangerous kind, unless you want me to include the mosquitoes under that heading of wild game. Did you want me to include the mosquitoes?
Well, now that you've mentioned them, you have them, I guess.
Yes.
I didn't realize they had them in Labrador. What other tourist attractions do you have, though? Real things.
We expect skiing to become a big thing in the near future. As you may know, Labrador has a terrible climate, which provides us with plenty of snow all year round.
Yes.
Unfortunately, the hilly section with lots of ski slopes is the only part that doesn't get lots of snow. But we're in the process of solving that problem right now.
How are you going to do that?
We're using forced labor to drag large rocks into the snow belt and pile them up until we have artificial mountains.
That sounds like it would take years to do. I mean, you said yourself Labrador has a small population, so you can't have many convicts to use as forced labor.
Well, actually, we have more than you might think. Sentencing tourists to long terms for minor infractions has been a big help.
Oh, I see.
We have almost 600 Yankees doing field work as boulder draggers right now.
Well, I don't suppose you mention that in any of your literature, do you?
Well, we have pictures of the new ski resorts under construction, but we've touched up the photos so that none of the faces of the workmen show. We thought it might upset people if they happened to spot their loved ones chained together on the rock pile.
I suppose it might.
Yes.
Well, now, any other features you want to mention?
Well, no, that's about it. I just hope I didn't get called home for all I've said here, that's all. If you think Labrador is a terrible place to visit, you can imagine what it's like to live there.
I can imagine, yes.
So long.
We'll drop down to your tourist booth.
Good. If you would, I'd appreciate it.
See how it is, and all of you other folks might look in there at 1440 Broadway. And now, the Whippet Motor Car Company, observing the 45th anniversary of its disappearance, brings you another episode of The Gathering Dusk, the heartwarming story of a girl who overcomes every obstacle to achieve complete misery. As we look in on the Bessinger household today, Edna is flopping in the foyer. It's mid-afternoon, and plainclothesman Evernock of the village police force has just arrived.
Oh, it's you, plainclothesman of the village police force Evernock. It was good of you to answer my call so quickly. I hope you didn't have to rush and change into your plain clothes so you'd be dressed properly to go on duty.
No, not at all, Miss Edna. I was already wearing plain clothes when your call came in.
Well, I suppose you plainclothesmen would have to be prepared for any emergency that way. You know, sort of like firemen who sleep in their underwear and things.
I'm afraid I don't see the analogy there.
Well, you don't actually see their underwear either once they get to the fire. They always wear raincoats or something over it.
Yes, ma'am. But the situation still isn't quite the same.
No.
A plainclothesman doesn't stay dressed in plain clothes just so he'll be ready for an emergency. In fact, I even wear plain clothes on my day off because it's the only kind I have.
Well, my stars, I never dreamed you were so underpaid that you had to go around in your uniform even when you weren't working.
Well, the amount we're paid doesn't really have anything to do with it, Miss Edna. Matter of fact, I imagine I'd wear a suit just about like this one if I wasn't on the police force at all.
Well, in a case like that, they'd nail you in a minute for impersonating an officer, wouldn't they?
Well, Miss Edna, I don't think anybody's ever been arrested for impersonating a plainclothesman just because of the way he was dressed. And besides, I don't imagine you call me all the way over here to discuss my wardrobe.
Well, no, you're right enough about that, plainclothesman of the village police force, Evernock. Frankly, I've been scared to death all day because a strange man's been hanging around the neighborhood. And I'm sure he's watching this house.
Well, can you give me any kind of a description that might help us track him down?
Well, of course, I've been so terrified to get a good look at him. I'd say he's around 40, medium height, a little on the heavy side, and wearing a dark blue suit.
Well, that's a description of me, Miss Edna. And I have been watching this house all day.
Well, what on earth for?
Because you called in this morning and told me to. You said you'd heard a prowler on the porch.
Well, heavenly days. I forgot all about that, plainclothesman of the village police force, Evernock. I discovered the noise on the porch was just the Ferguson's cat. But I never thought to call you back and cancel the stakeout. Well, you can't imagine how much better I feel now that the mystery's cleared up. It's almost as if I'm no longer standing in the gathering dusk. Mm-hmm.
Well, is it possible that Edna's sense of relief can ultimately grow into true happiness? Or will Mr. Evernock's departure merely leave her all alone with the realization that nobody is watching the house? Join us for the next exciting episode when Edna may be forced to go outside and watch it herself in the gathering dusk.
BBC, the British Broadcasting Corporation. I hope I've got that right, Roland.
Yes. Yes, that's absolutely right.
He is the ace commentator in Britain, and he will describe the scene as he sees it.
Well, of course, Jib, as we know it, is well known to us. And very colorful sight it is today, and even for one who during the war, as I did, knew it perfectly well. The colors are brighter than usual. There are the reds of the French, as it were, the reds of the... I've got my notes here, sir.
The reds of Italian.
The reds of the Italian cars contrasting vividly, I think, is the right word, with the blues of the French cars and the white and green of the other nations. Also, there is, of course, the 17th Battalion of the Royal Recklandshire Fusiliers, who are stationed here, and a very fine regiment they are, who are at the moment beginning their march past to herald the arrival of the Duke of Edinburgh, who is going to open the course on his detuned Morris, which, and a very attractive little car it is, too.
Well, return to Gibraltar. What time would it be over there now? It must be...
I was figuring it's...
up to 9 o'clock.
Yeah, in the evening.
Yeah.
About 9:15.
So but the course must be lit.
That's why they have it on the first day of summer, because it is a long day.
Very good.
You haven't said hello to anybody else. Webb just came in. He's the only one of our staff who...
That's right, taken with that, the Grand Prix over
That's
there.
An exciting thing we're presenting today.
You know, for a while I dabbled in sports cars, but it's an expensive hobby.
I should say, give it
up.
Yeah, and it's of course, has a certain amount of danger.
This
Gibraltar Grand Prix is one of the toughest courses in the world. It was just described, of course, by our correspondents.
I remember that course very well.
Did you ever drive it?
Yes, but not in the competition.
Oh.
I drove around there in a small car one time. And I hit that same chapel they speak of, that Methodist chapel.
Yeah.
I sideswiped it as I went by. It's a very narrow corner there.
I know it is, according to what
yes,
the
sir.
Map on the papers we have here. And that last 8-yard straightaway is kind of...
It isn't so long, you know. The way they talk about it, you'd think it was 3 miles. It's only 8 yards.
24 feet.
Right. Cashews and Spanish peanuts?
Yes.
Anybody?
Yeah, Ray sprung today.
Oh, so very good.
The news department should be very happy.
Oh, that's on here.
And I was wondering if we have arranged to have another Henry Gladstone Trio offering today.
You know, somebody was talking to me over in the tap. They said they didn't know that Henry was so musical.
Isn't he good on the drums?
Well, I guess everybody can play the drums, can't they?
Well, it's not... It's a little difficult to play it well, and he certainly does.
I wouldn't let Buddy Rich hear you say anybody could play the drums.
No way. Henry doesn't hold a candle to Buddy Rich, but...
No.
For his little trio, it's okay. ...of Gibraltar, so let's tune in right away.
Appears to be bounding off that station in the Azores.
Yes, it's a little bit distorted, certainly.
Well, let's hear
I think it's the Fusiliers.
Oh, is that what it is? Let's hear it.
It may take some time, owing to the fact that the regimental mascot, which is taking part in the parade, is a tortoise. And, of course, the consequence of the parade has to move at the pace of the regimental pet. Now, that is statutory. There's nothing we can do about it. I just hope that the tortoise will realize that we're all waiting.
Well, thank you very much, Roland. We'll hear from you later, and I don't think I could have put it as concisely as you did, but of course you have... Yeah, I've never been here before, but...
Oh, I know it frightfully well, and one misses the rock when one isn't on it. In London, I miss the rock a great deal. Yes, well, if anything I can do later on to explain to you the colors of the cars or any technical knowledge which you may not have, I will be more than... mind my tea, it's right on the edge of the table now. Oh, I'm sorry, I didn't say that. Well, I will do my very best to help.
Now, before the race starts, we will take you into the pits so we can actually talk to some of these men that are going to drive round the rock today. And first of all, the German pit, where the 1.5-liter Schnorchades is still under dust sheets. And here is the young German aristocrat Graf Wolfram von Grips, great friend of us all. And would you care to say a few words, Wolfram?
Yeah, well, I don't know how much I'm allowed to say. Of course, we work in the greatest secrecy here. And, well, I notice you're walking on crutches. Does that indicate... Well, no, I haven't been hurt or anything. It's just that the position in the car that we have to adopt owing to the very special construction of this car is extremely difficult to get used to. I have to... perhaps you'd care to meet Herr Altbauer, who is the chief of our racing group, and...
Ja, Sie müssen doch gar nicht sagen. Es ist unerhört, dass Sie das sagen.
Yeah, but he will tell you. I'm afraid I'm not really... We are working, as I say, in the greatest...
But you want to know.
All part of the preliminaries there at the Rock of Gibraltar. The race should be getting underway shortly. Obviously, our correspondent is killing time, as they say, filling it out until the race starts.
Well, that's quite a talent, too. That takes a knack.
Unfortunately, he doesn't have it. The report of the race, the Grand Prix at Gibraltar, has indicated that something is happening there now. Come in, please.
The preparations we have made, nobody else has made these preparations. And thank you very much. I would ask you not to ask any more questions. There will be a formal press release after our victory.
Thank you very much. And I see the cars are covered with dust sheets. They're evidently very secret. And Herr Altbauer is now left. He's a stickler for discipline. There are four cars there. One is slightly out of line. They must be very light because Herr Altbauer has just picked one up in order to put it back in line with the others. And that's the only hint we have of the lightness of the German cars. And seeing the ease with which he picked it up, I can quite imagine that a handkerchief might make all the difference. Well, now we're over in the French pit, the Orgini pit, and Monsieur Orgini is here himself. He's evoked the admiration of the entire racing fraternity by his very gallant struggle against lack of funds. I don't think I'm speaking out of turn there.
No, it's nothing I seek to disguise. Would you care for a cigarette?
What? You smoke in the pits here?
Oh, yes, it's all right. The cars are insured. Light? Well, we had no time to finish the cars owing to the strike in France. Actually, we had no time to finish the cars because of the lack of money, but the strike gives us a good excuse for not having finished the cars.
Well, I noticed that one car is blue and the other is just a kind of metal color.
Well, you know, paint costs money, and I hope the Germans will forgive us because we haven't had time, and the French government tax on paint is extremely because it's being dominated by the painters, of course. The Bernard Buffet, the other French painters, are taking all the paint.
Well, is there anything very new in your engines? this year?
No, the engines are the same as we've always had. They're very old. If you can find us a new engine before the race starts, we would be extremely grateful. We are extremely practical people. And after all, it's Le Spa. It's sport.
Well, you have no hope of winning, then?
We always have hope of winning because the others might lose.
All right. We'll keep up with our coverage as long as the satellite holds out from the Grand Prix on Gibraltar.
Boy, it's really building up to great excitement, a great race to look forward to.
Hello there. Are you all set to take over next week for Neil over at the tap?
Yes, I've been working. Well, what is today? Monday?
This is Thursday.
Oh, this is Thursday.
What made you think it was Monday?
I don't know. I lost 3 days there somewhere. But I've been having my refresher course, and I think I'll be ready come 8 o'clock Monday morning to take over. They open that early, huh? Yes, they're open from 8 in the morning to 2 the next morning.
Making any plans for this first day of summer? Anything special? I mean, on a celebration line?
Or... Is this the first day of summer?
Longest day of the year. The sun sets tonight at 8:31.
Wow, well, that didn't come up over there at lunch today.
The sun or the topic?
The topic of the first day of summer.
Oh, it didn't come up. You'd think it would.
Consequently, I've made no plans.
Look, excuse me just a second. I have to pause here.
Sure.
It's time that we... And then Bob and Ray will be back with more right here.
Next, Mary Backstage, Noble Wife, the story of America's favorite family of the Footlights and of their fight for security and happiness against the concrete heart of Broadway. Yesterday, after he dragged the pier back to Salem Willows, Carmine joined the crew of the Deep Sea Doodle. Now, as it plies through the waters headed south to New York, we hear Captain Larson say...
Here, let me pour some more of me port for you.
Here, I'll hold your bottle for you, Captain.
Very good, matey.
Well, it's very nice of you, Captain.
It's very nice. It's a delicious port. You're very...
Oh, who was that? It's the ship's bell, matey.
Two bells and all is well.
Two bells? I heard one. What time is that supposed to be at sea?
Here, let me fill up your glass there, pup.
Oh, thanks. Don't mind if I do. Watch out for that spar beam, Captain. You're going to walk right into it. Oh, he's... Are you all right, Captain? Captain?
Why, no... Who's been helping themselves to my port wine?
Well, you invited us all to have...
Why, I want a little sassy answer, I'll ask for it. What kind of swabs have we got on this ship?
And all is well.
Oh, I'm afraid this is going to be a miserable trip from now on.
We'll have a tight ship all the way to New York.
Captain, look out for that spar. You're going to walk right into it again.
Four bells and all is well.
You all right, Captain?
I thought I heard three bells. Here, let me help you up. What happened to all my good friends here?
Well, you...
You all look like you're nursing bruises.
Knocked us all down, Captain.
Well, that's
spar hit you.
Who did?
When that spar hit, you walked into that spar.
Captain, whale ahead, whale on the starboard. Captain, whale on the starboard.
Whale on the starboard.
Carmine sails as a whale on the starboard.
Whale on the starboard.
Well, whale on the starboard.
And so Carmine, the newest member of Captain Larson's crew, spots a whale on the starboard side. You want to join us tomorrow when we'll hear Mary say,
I don't feel good.
That's tomorrow in the next exciting episode of Mary Backstage, Noble Wife. Word Carr speaking.
Grand Prix, so let's check back with our correspondents there.
It's colored all our attitudes since we started this. But what are those bottles I noticed there? I see a lot of bottles. Is that cognac? Is that
still
brandy?
Still in the pits, I guess, interviewing
the
driver.
Yes, of course, racing fuels are not allowed, but, you know, French machinery is emotional, like French people, and it seems to understand what is desired of it, and therefore, sometimes a little Armagnac, a little cognac in the carburetor, well, it goes better. Well, there's a lot of girls around here, and very beautiful girls. I don't think I've ever seen so many beautiful girls in any pit in my life. What are they doing here? Are they,
well, you know, they're friends of the drivers, and we find girls useful because our pit is next to the Germans, and it may make the Germans a little less efficient, because with their Wagner music and all that, it annoys Monsieur Altbauer to have the girls here. And you really feel that you will not win this race? Well, if we lose, we still get the starting money. You know, it's too late to take that from us, and perhaps in the next race we will have both cars painted. And if during the race you feel like a smoke, you can always come in here, you know. Well, thank you very much, Mr. Argini. Well, now we're in the Italian pit, the Fanfani car. Which is here, and a really exclusive interview we have here with the great Paraguayan champion.
Ow! Miguel, I don't know where they buy.
Jose Julio Fandango, who is very, very shy, never likes to give interviews, and we also have here.
Giovanni! Ow!
Higinio Rosarubi, who will translate for us. He is, of course, the very talented amateur driver, and. Could you translate for us, Mr. Rosarubi?
I would be very pleased to do so. You want to talk to Mr. Fandango, who's here, and anything you want to ask him, I will do my best to translate to him. And
just one question: does he think he'll win?
Does he think he'll win? Usted ganará, ¿verdad?
No,
Could we have an answer now?
He said he doesn't know whether he's going to win or not.
Well, that is a very exclusive interview. I don't think that Mr. Fandango has ever been interviewed before, and thank you both very much.
All right, and thank you too, sir, and we'll be checking later as this Grand Prix of Gibraltar continues.
All part of the preparations going on there across the sea. Fred Feldman, and I think I've just been told that there's some activity.
Yes. Continuing. Action. So, come in, please, on Gibraltar.
Now. Here is Commendatore Fanfani, a very distinguished constructor of racing automobiles. He's coming over here, Signor Fanfani.
Yes.
Now, I want one question. I want to. Well, perhaps this is not the moment, and we'll try and come back later before the race actually.
Oh,
Well, they're having a little trouble there with the Italian entrant. They're in the pits, but we'll keep check, and when anything does happen, we'll go back. But now I think
podium, he's being helped by several Boy Scouts. He's a very venerable gentleman that we all admire and cherish, Lord Weeps of Sebring. And maybe as this is a great British character, Raymond Thaxter, would you say a few words about his background while he's negotiating those last two steps, please?
Yes, certainly. Lord Weeps is a really fine old sportsman. He's been in politics since 1883, and a very wonderful career he's had. Minister of Pensions in 1896. He won the decathlon for Great Britain in the first Olympic Games. He has been a fencing champion. He's been in the show jumping team before the turn of the century. Cricket, football, lawn tennis, the Gordon Bennett Trophy. He's a really wonderful old sportsman and a wonderful old sport. And I think he's going to say a few words now to the crowd, and he will, of course, start the race.
This is the second Grand, whatever it is, I can't read this paper, the Duroc. I want you to abide by the rules, to come out fighting, no hitting below the, as you were. I want you to keep a straight bat and abide by the whistle. Don't balk any other horse. Run a good clean race. No foot faulting. Chin up. Don't shoot till you see the white. Anyway, I've carry on the old tradition. Make this a land fit for heroes. Leave the door open for negotiation. Well, we don't want to fight, but by jingo, there'll always be an England. Carry on.
There was an atmosphere of great tension here. I can only describe the atmosphere as extremely tense, as the drivers begin one by one to crouch in the circles which have been marked for that purpose on the road, with the exception of the Germans, that is, who are being carried into position by their mechanics now. There's Fling, there's von Grips. The governor is facing the sea, but an equerry has just turned him to face the track. And yes, his arm is being lifted for him. The checkered flag is up. I can't describe the tension here. Oh. 20 seconds. Well, perhaps you'd care to hear my stopwatch. Just to let you know that you're in good hands. I say I didn't mean that.
Right? 1, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5.
You're off.
Well, apparently they jumped the gun a little bit, but the race is underway, the Gibraltar Grand Prix, and we'll be covering that, bring you all of the up-to-date stuff on that. The nation's outstanding authorities on the meaning and derivation of English words, and he's here to answer some of the questions you listeners have sent in. You ready to make a stab at handling this first one, Doctor?
Well, Mr. Elliott, I'm shocked beyond unbelief at your mishandlement of a common verb conjecture in that last sentence.
Oh?
Even utilizing all of our modern technological advancements, there's no machine which has been invented with which one can make a stab with. Since mediocrity days, it has been plausible to make a knife which people then stab other people with which. But making the stab itself without
indulging the human factorship in the procession is misthinkable. Now, have I made you unaware of your erroneousness?
Yes, I think so. I'm unaware of everything you said. But let's get right to this first question.
All right.
From a woman in New London, Connecticut.
Sure.
She writes, for years, I've heard references made to one thing or another being clean as a hound's tooth. Now, I have become the owner of a hound, and I find that no matter how often I take him to the dentist, his teeth are stained and have a lot of tartar on them and like that. And, of course, I try to make him brush after every meal, but you know how it is with active young hounds, always on the go.
Yeah.
The thing that puzzles me is where we ever got the expression, clean as a hound's tooth, when hounds apparently don't have clean teeth at all.
Well, obliviously, this woman has misunderstood the old saying. Actually, it had its beginnings at the time the Huns overran Europe.
Oh.
People notificated the sparkling smile of their leader, Attila. It was in tribute to him that a referendum originally was made to something being clean as a Hun's tooth. Actuarially, the expression wasn't too accurate even then. Not all Huns had clean teeth.
Uh-huh.
Attila merely happened to be in the test group that had 34% fewer cavities.
Doctor, do you think anybody is really going to believe all this?
Oh, I suppose a few people will. You know what Abraham Lincoln said about fooling some of them.
Yeah. I
know some of it, I think.
I know
said.
What he said.
So you can fool some of it, some of it.
I also know that you can make a terrible situation worse by misquoting Abraham Lincoln.
Okay.
We'll get along. This is from a man in Passaic.
Oh.
He writes, a while back, the police put up a sign near my home that says, watch out for school children. Now, this has upset me because it just warns me to watch out, but gives no indication of what the school children may be planning to do. Now, I protect myself the only way I know how, by driving as fast as I can whenever I pass the sign.
Yeah.
But the police keep giving me traffic tickets on the charge that I'm not watching out for the school children. Now, according to your interpretation of the sign, how fast will I have to go in order to convince the police I'm playing it safe?
Now, did you say this man lives where? In,
Passaic.
Passaic.
Mm-hmm.
Well, in that area, the main thing you have to watch out for with school children is stealing hubcaps. I'd say that anything over 65 or 70 miles an hour would make it pretty hard for a kid to get a hubcap as you went by.
I would think that that would be absolutely true.
Yes.
Okay, we'll get a little business in here, and then we'll get back to you. All right.
Over the course, as the restless crowd begins slowly to disperse, unwilling to believe that there is to be no result, the only smiling faces are those of the bookmakers who will be leaving for Tangier on the next boat. Well, the spirit of 1906 still evidently pervades this hardest of all Grand Prix. Will any combination of car and driver be able to break the jinx next year and finish? Who can tell what still lies wrapped in the unfathomable womb of time? Men and automobiles are transitory. Only the rock, gaunt sentinel guarding the secrets of bygone ages, as I find I said before, will bear its silent testimony before history and know forever what no man knows today. This has been Barrett Sparks and Redlin Thaxter reporting on the second Grand Prix du Rock. Reproduction of all or part of this commentary is expressly forbidden.
Well, that's how it ended. They all dropped out. Nobody
finished.
Well, that's kind of sad.